member of Frontex, Caroline Feasy. So a great segue from the previous show, the history from our welcome ally, Gore Vidal, you know, saying, oh, our country has been an object of contempt in the world, and looking at history, which we aspire to do this hour as well. And our guest is slowly coming in from Alaska. There we go. But also even the public service announcement, emotional support here. Well, we go, well, here we are crafting trickster emotional support as we gather at this dark of the moon, which Yeats called the magic realm. So more than perfectly, I welcome the return of my longtime ally, David Lynn Grimes, friend of the Orcas, wilderness guide, troubadour wizard, that we may honor trickster, jaunty, no matter how well informed, liberating ourselves one quip at a time. And as he says, and we'll explain, right, sometimes the healing dose is close to the lethal dose, and we are honoring all whom we love who are in daunting circumstance, adventure, dangerous, beautiful assignment. Welcome, David Lynn Grimes.
Oh, hello, my dear, and hello, all you dears in Radio Land. Caroline, can you hear me all right? I've got my little earbuds in.
We're trying. I think our Skookum board up can up your level. That's right. We invite in Trickster. We are here with...
I'm helping them dial it in, if that's helping.
That's good. And kind of perfect, just to weave a little context. So it is the dark of the moon that Yeats called the magic realm, new moon in Cancer on Monday. And we love symmetry. Truly, Trickster, be our booking agent. If we just relax and raft down the river Escoche, something of which you know a fair amount, because we go see how the moon... Right now, next to Venus, is at 8 degrees of Gemini. And when you were born, David Lynn Grimes, your Venus is 8 degrees of Gemini. And when this country was born, Uranus, its trickster soul, was at 8 degrees of Gemini, whose image is a quiver full of arrows, and may they be tipped with compassion, with tyranny as their target. Swoosh. Mudra.
Oh,
participatory metaphor.
Oh, that's lovely. Those metaphors spring off your tongue like spring rain on the flowers.
There we go. But especially, you know, oh, dedicated listening team, we're all in this dream together. You know, really, as we go along, encourage the mudra of these metaphors. So everybody, quiver full of arrows, you know, pluck one out, tip it with compassion, take aim, pull it back, and let it fly in a liberating fashion. That, you know, that's where we are dedicating. And then just before we romp forth into the mystery world, the sun's image today is a mantle of power tossed over the right shoulder, assuming the mantle of responsibility, feeling the descent of supportive, powerful energies, heeding a call, and cape-like flare. So invite everybody together, a mantle of power over the right shoulder. Fun! Yes, we are assuming the mantle of responsibility, but we have backup. It's not hubris. Oh, the healing waters are coming as well, the feeling the descent of powerful energy. So let's do that. There we go.
I was pouring myself a salutary cup of ritual tea here in honor of everything. And I just wanted to say something. You've reminded us that real power is that which is healing, and we might say in service to love. And on the tea bag, you know, there's the yogi tea that has the tea bag wisdom on the little tag. My favorite one, which I didn't get today, but I know it by heart, is sometimes the most important act we can take with courage is to relax. And I believe that much of the great turmoil in the cosmos right now is as much within as without. And as I struggle with it and am in grief and in joy, sometimes my tail is wagging and sometimes it isn't, but I'm remembering to do some heart-focused breathing with feelings of appreciation. And lo and behold, all sorts of things spring off my tongue in appreciation, which I otherwise might have been reciting the litany of everything that seems wrong or screwed up. So a word to all of us to be in appreciation, to relax. We're all born to be here in this time. And when we unify, when we soften our own hearts, we link up with everything. And that's a good place to be right now.
That's great, because that was just a little bit. We remember, what I was saying backstage. You know, when we give artful expression to grief, it becomes a sacrament of kinship and oneness. And wonderful Deborah Falmouth saying, you know, Salaam, one of the 99 names of God, peace. And she said, you know, in Arabic, it's not the absence of war or violence; it's the presence of oneness. No. So. Yeah, in every way, and as we had kahooted backstage, we do want to honor all beings in arduous circumstance in need of encouraging solace, and a special woof to my beloved brother Joe. He's been my brother since the 18th dynasty in Egypt, for sure, a metaphysical companion. May we all have a sibling or a spirit sibling who is a metaphysical companion, the likes of his spirited self. So he's an adverse, challenging medical adventure. We would, you know, bacteriological blood infection. We go whatever he needs, energy, vitality, but he's eager to be supported. And we, you know, All that we do for ourselves grants us the spiritual muscle tone to do for world. So it's for all beings. We've all been granted a customized underworld with which to navigate. And when we gather, we can really feel, you know, mend that fabric of support that we want to do imaginatively. That may it incarnate into actuality. So, yes.
Yeah, and it seems like. Riffing off that, and hello, Brother Joe. I have, instead of one braid in my hair, I have two today, because your Brother Joe, sometime a year ago, said, David, you'll get better if you just get more wild, be more colorful. And so I have a green tie on my right braid and a red one on my left, which in boating nautical lore, red to the port and green to the right. So I feel like my vessel is more in balance, and I want to thank your brother Joe for that.
Excellent. And that we just to and fro with the choreography, because red is Mars and Venus is green, oh, la la, and they are in harmonious cahoots right now. There's the moon in Gemini, right on your Venus and right on the U.S. trickster self, you know, a quiver full of arrows right next to Venus, newly emerged as the morning star. Glorious sight. I saw it at 4:47 a.m. going, oh, and the comet Neowise. I haven't seen it yet, but it's right to the right of the moon before of Venus before sunrise. Oh, glory is abounding us. But
and,
so,
and what do we know about this? What is the comet Neowise? What do we know about this comet, this beautiful comet?
Well, we don't presume. Comets are messengers. We know it comes every 7,000 years, and that it's millions of years old. All hail Neowise. And, you know, there's the traditional downfall of tyrants with comets. And we, you know, 1066, there was a big thing over the battlefield. We go, right. And as Brother Joe said, we're all gathering wise quips from our teammates through the years, you know. And if it's not true, let's make it. If it's not true, let's make it true. There we go. So downfall of tyrants. And if it's not true, let's make it true right now. There we go.
Well, and I've got a few tyrants in myself that I know want to go out to pasture and have more fun than being tyrannical inside me. So I let them go right now. And as you wisely and egalitarianly and sweetly and tail waggingly say, you know, don't wish on anything outside of you that you wouldn't wish on yourself. And so I do wish to say hello to whatever is at war inside myself and bring unification.
Right. Well, let me. This is the small, you know, what is disguised as mundane circumstance around us contains all of the big themes. I really think this is part of our dynamic here. So something I got a great deal out of was a small thing, but I think it's pertinent to everybody's dance. So I was happily sipping coffee outdoors, socially distanced with the dogs at the beach, you know, and giant, militarized, black Jeep SUV drives up right in front of where people are sipping their coffee and leaves the motor running. It is my bete noire. If I ever want to get annoyed, I just hire someone to do that. And I had inner vituperative about this person and what's wrong with the world and compensatory weeniedom and just blah, blah, blah. And then I remembered again, there is no conversing, no effective conversing, that's all tantrum yoga, no effective conversing until we compost our harumphitudes. So I was like, no. And then I said to the man, I go, good sir, it is the custom in this neighborhood, in this realm, to turn off our motor, you know, while waiting when people are eating. And he's like, does it really bother you? And I go, yes. And he goes, well, I will, since you asked so nicely. And then when I went by his car on the way out, I just said to him, that was really great. And he goes, that was really great. There should be more of that. A simple thing, but I so loved it, and we're practicing all the time. We could have been hot-headed and resentful and, and contributed to the world's heat, right? But there we go.
Well, really, and really, we all want to be playing together. That's what any self-respecting wolf family or orca family, you know, throughout the day, there is play. And you may be off by yourself for a while trying to catch a salmon or whatever, you're on your errands, but frequently throughout the day you come back together and you play together. And so that was great, good play. And are you going to get a giant black Jeep now? Is that your new rig?
And leave my motor running just for extending the compassionate realm.
I just have to say one more thing. When you told me that story yesterday, that very day, for the first time in my life, I left my van engine running because I had hooked a freezer up with, and I had some frozen fish and some frozen berries that I'm taking to people far away. And so for the first time, I actually left my engine running, and I think it was a good thing, but I won't do it tomorrow.
No, but it's like then when I was leaving the next day, you know, torrential rain, 3 to 5 inches, you know, flash floods, everything, but I was stopping off for coffee anyway, and the dog's in the car, and I go, I can feel the symmetry, I'm going to do the thing, I'm going to leave the motor running while I pick up my coffee. It's happened, and it reminds me, again, of, you know, part of Brother Joe's, Frater J's, and my journey, the Builders of the Atom, studying mystery schools and whatnot, but, you know, something that's a little hard to whatever, but early on they go, you know, do not dwell on the unlovable qualities of others, because we are creators and it will manifest in your life. Which, to my disobedient self, is a little earnest and whatever, and also impossible, in a way. But it's like, but the general gist of the thing, I did love the irony that whatever we finger wag at, you know, it's like a wise Jungian analyst friend of mine said, when people really warn you about this stuff, they're warning you about them. and then just other quips that I have to honor Barbara Dunn. She said, when people flatter you, they're paying you for what they're about to take. And it's like, oh, that's fun too. Flattery is prison. Real praise is nutrient, and we can tell the difference. But everything can be imprisoning or liberating. But play, yes, you know, they play. You told me the wolves play every 30 minutes, even if they're hunting or hunted.
Well, they might be 29 it might be 29 minutes or it might be 33 minutes, but about every half hour, the wolf family will engage in play and fun. And as you might have told me, charisma in wolves is sometimes referred to as those who are most is to those who best initiate play is charisma.
Yes, and charisma, the word I learned from another friend, comes from charis, from which we get charitable, from which we get Eucharist, from which we get Cordelia, dedicated heart, in Shakespeare. So true charisma is a charitable heart. It's not this toxic, imprisoning swagger. It's really a deep heart, right, which we would wish for all beings to. But in the play realm, in very high Japanese culture, another thing I share with Brother Joe, a love of, in a very high, refined, aristocratic language, everything is prefaced with play at. I mean, they go all the way. We hear your father played at dying, right? We played at doing radio. I mean, that's easy. But they take it all the way. And so it's an we hear you played at being sick. I think it's a liberating thing because it's in play. It's not. That there is no fixed future, and in the love of divination and astrology, I mean, I think everything's maturing, and so people often say, "What's going to happen?" You know, and it's like, you know, that's not the question. we're gazing at the past. The future is invisible behind us, and what we do with it, it's what is available. What is available to cooperate with, to refuse to engage in that play would be churlish. Really, the opposite of charismatic, in a way. So, play, yes.
Well, and also during, particularly during hard times. Let's say we're having hard times now on the planet. Let's say there's a crisis. Now
we'll play
would be
at
a
that.
Good time. Now would be a good time for one, right? There's much to change. There's much to deal with, and. What was it? Mark Twain said something like, "History doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme." And I was right in the middle of the Exxon oil spill 30 years ago in Alaska, killing all of our, so many of our kindred animals, fish, birds, whales, eagles. And at the same time that year, the wall came down in Berlin, the Soviet Union fell apart. Nelson Mandela was released from prison and becomes president of South Africa. Tiananmen Square in China, and the animals dying for our sins in the Eden of Alaska. And I feel like we're rhyming similarly with a time like that 30 years ago. So we're sort of spirally returning where we have no idea what's coming next, but that means anything is possible. And that's why it's really important for any of us who can do so to take time to listen to music and to dance and to be with things that are truly regenerative and redemptive, because we care so much and we want to be here in this time. That will help us be better co-creators with whatever is changing, and crisis, we know, is the dangerous time of opportunity. The Chinese characters, they use the character for danger and the character for opportunity for the concept of crisis, but some dangerous time of opportunity. But sometimes they add a third character in the middle between danger and opportunity, and that means the still place. The still place between danger and opportunity, and that is the play place, the place where we're available, calm and alert, but willing to play with all our hearts, so that we can co-create, as you did with the Jeep that was leaving its running motor running. It's all a dream, right? Everything is alive. Anything that shows up in any moment, there is an opportunity to spiral or dance with or acknowledge. Yes.
Well, it was the man in the Jeep. The Jeep itself wanted to be disassembled and turned into potting plants for palm trees. But help me, I've been forced into the template of a war machine. I want to be a gentle, beautiful thing. Change me into art. It's like, well, maybe he'll go home and do that. You know, again, you know, it's like the tale of Mushkil Gusha again. Every Thursday night, there we go, which again, Brother Joe and I have told for eons and centuries. As it is Thursday night, tonight, the night of Mushkil Gusha, the remover of all difficulties, and it is a marvelous Sufi tale, but right now is also important because suddenly one remembers, it is Thursday, it is the night of Mushkal Gusha. No sooner did this thought come into our minds than a charitable man passing by tossed a tiny coin, we said, good sir, you have given me money which is of no use to me. If, however, your kindness could extend and sitting here and eating one or two dates and hearing my story, I would be eternally grateful. So he tells him the fantastic story of how this came to be, and the kind man says, I think you must be mad. But he was a kindly man, and when he got home, he discovered that all of his difficulties had disappeared. And that made him start to think a great deal about Mushkal Gusha, but he leaves our story here. So this is the moment where we remember our vow. We remember, like, oh, I forgot to give a gift on Thursday. I forgot to give a gift in the name of Mushkal Gusha so that those who are in real need will always find their way. But now we remember. There we go. Yes.
Remembering. And remembering much of the sacrifice that's going on in the world right now, some of it is being remembered, some of it is being honored. And when sacrifice is out in the open, and we all can feel it, it's the opportunity to make it sacred. And then that taps in with what is most dear to us, which may have been covered over. We may have lost what was most dear to us. But someone dies. Someone is raped. Someone is unjustly beaten. The tree is poisoned. Whatever we honor, when we feel that in our hearts, then our lives change, because that which is most dear to us, the love of creation and all living things, starts to propel our heart forward, and now would be a good time, right? So this is an important time to be in touch whenever we can, however briefly, with what is most dear to us, what is most sacred, and send appreciation and see if we can wag our tails in honor, because that leads to redemption within us and in the world around us.
Oh, there's much in what you say. Let's see. Right. Remember, Carl Jung wrote to a friend who was deeply depressed and alone. And he said, if I were in your circumstance, I would grab libido, Mars, from wherever it be, from the tail wag of a dog, from a cloud passing over, grab the Mars vitality energy and invite it in. And it's like, that's good too. But yes, our gazing at the past, and there's so much crafted, remember, you know, grief expressed artfully becomes a sacrament of kinship. And one of the best examples I've seen of that was, I was turning on the news going, oh, here's boring Lawrence O'Donnell, right? But no, wait. Lawrence O'Donnell turned his whole show over to this fantastic documentary by Tremaine Lee called Stone Goes to the South. And it was like, oh, that was fabulous. I highly recommend it. It's free on YouTube. Stone Goes to the South. It's a remarkable journey, absolutely grief artfully expressed, but real deep history, Confederacy, many statues went up as recently as 2000. Gotta know the grief and the sacrifice and the pain. You know, gaze at it all, as Yahya Lababidi says, you can't expect to bury pain and not have it grow roots. But that it was
that title, Stone Goes to the South, who or what is stone in the title?
Stone Goes to the South are the statues of the Confederacy.
Ah, well, okay. Well, this is funny. I actually have in my hand, I was just rapidly, as you know, our magic radio hour was approaching, I was just gathering, you know, amulets and charms. And I have this rock. I have this rock in my hand right now. It fits right in the palm nicely, which is two colors. In the way that they are sometimes. And on a white face, there is the letter J, and then at the edge of the stone, the letter O. I have J-O, and so I realized today I'm going to look for a rock that has a Y in it. And with stone, I will have joy.
Right, and we could have, yeah, and may they replace the Confederate statues and all that they contain. The transferring of imagery, not nothing. And I like somebody on our trickster call.
And do you know, you You may know that in some of the places, some of the parks where statues have been pulled down or changes, there's have become hub navels of the neighborhood right now are brimming with energy and dance and some kind of shimmering, like, oh my gosh, we're in a time of change. Sometimes these sacred stones, had the wrong guys, and that is can be better tuned right now.
Yeah, no, that's great. No, absolutely, and better statues of Black Lives Matter people erected. Craft again, grief artfully expressed is powerful oneness. It's really great. Yeah, the statues
coming. Or in Japan, excuse me, but since we love Japan, in the old Shinto shrines where in the hills there are statues. Or porcelain pottery, of the deer and the fox and Tanuki, the raccoon dog, and birds, so that our statues are also multi-species inspired.
Yes. Yes, no, and I loved somebody on our Monday Trickster class said, and let's imagine that the horrific spirits, say, of Jefferson Davis, Robert E. Lee, are liberated from their tyrannical identity by the destruction of their statues, going, oh man, I was imprisoned with myself, this horrible thing, and people actually liked it. Terrible thing. Now I'm gone back into infinite whatever. There, but thank you. Thank you. Because the trickster liberates even the tyrant, not counting on it, but willing, the whole circumstance, right? And but that's a great thing to say. So, yes.
And always, the tyrant within ourselves. That because as we do, you were talking about Neil Douglas Klotz suggesting that in the original Aramaic, when Jesus says, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth," in the original idiom would have meant more like, "Blessed are those who soften the emotional rigidity within their own hearts, for they shall have all the power of nature." So,
yes.
So much of the blessing in this time is for our inner struggle, to restore inner balance, is to link up with all creation, and then we're unified, and we can do anything against all odds, as the odds we like. We have the strength of everyone because our hearts are pure.
Yes,
so to speak.
Right, exactly, and so on. Right, and again, in our deep gaze and researching and wanting to know historic things that many people have already known, but coming back into group mind, going, I did not know, for instance, that Mexico was ardently anti-slave, in the mid 19th century, and it was the evil President Polk who was like, "We're going to take over Texas." Texas was Mexican, right? No slavery. And Polk was like, "We're going to take over Texas and kill the native people and make it a slave state," which is what they did. I didn't know that dynamic of Mexico. There's so much to know.
That story is a venerable tradition, it's just not as fun as playing better together.
Well... yeah. Well, we gotta know how, up to no good the whole thing is, and to bless it, going, well, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mexico, good for Mexico.
Yeah.
But the playing better together is, as we look, we do want, against all odds, desirable. May it be that all the children and babies be reunited with those who love them, mm-hmm. with profound apology and recompense, and as a small gesture, mm-hmm. let it be that Mar-a-Lago and all Trump properties be liberated into immigrant housing, for instance. There we go. Okay, so we're going to take a very short break, but just if you like that, waft that out into the memosphere. It doesn't have to be realistic. It can still incarnate. The cooperators are standing by. It would be very good, satisfying start. My guest today is longtime ally David Lynn Grimes. We're going to hear at break music a song by our friend Jessica, right? It's you singing, and it's Jessica Ruby Radcliffe's song.
Yeah, Jessica. It wrote itself through Jessica Ruby Radcliffe, and it is I who am singing it.
There we go. So here we go. This beautiful song as our break music, and we'll be right back. after this pertinent song. There we go.
Sometimes I fear my heart will break. It never does. It never does. As if by breaking it would make the most of love, the most of love. And little do I understand why pain and love go hand in hand. Or why the beauty of a song can make and keep my heart so strong. Oh, we are but a moment here, and in a moment we are gone. But every moment that we share becomes forever in a song. And when I feel my heart so full that it will break or overflow, then it will overflow in song. And never break, but only grow. Sometimes I feel my heart will break. It never does, it never does.
Ah. That's our guest, David Lynn Grimes, singing our wonderful friend Jessica Ruby Radcliffe's song, and really embodying and sallying forth that grief, artfully expressed, becomes a sacrament of kinship. So here we are back, Visionary Activist Show. I'm Caroline Casey. Our guest is David Lynn Grimes. And look, you know, synchronously, Trickster is our booking agent. Our adorable ally, Ron Kalk from Yosemite, is reporting in with beautiful pictures of Yosemite, like, oh my goodness, and his feet, sending natural power and beauty for your show. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And again,
Eagle Brother, we love you. Thank you for being in that beautiful place of falling waters.
Yes, with two very cute feet on the cliff, with the entire unfurling festivity of magnificent wild beauty beneath. Really great, reminding us, you know, again, you know, all the power, all the myths that ever were or will be are here now to draw upon. There's a beautiful thing. Mars in Aries right now is at the degree leader of a nation. We go, okay. And it's quintile Saturn, leadership, at 28 Capricorn. So it says the most practical thing right now, the image for Saturn, is a gypsy reading tea leaves, divination. But also, as great allies, Sylvia Hanley says, quintiles are irresistible eloquence, but also the capacity to open portals between worlds. So what I want to toss back to you, David Lynn Grimes and Ron Kalk and Carolyn Raffensperger and many people who are all chiming in telepathically and literally, really wonderful, all allies, all hands on deck, you know, is what are models of leadership that we want to open the door to pour into our own befoibled rogue species structures, that our heartful dedication to honor life, you know, grow the structures that support it. So, you know, we admire wolves and orcas, the wolves of the sea, and anybody else, the mentors, the rock and plant and animal mentors that we want to open the portal and invite them in?
Well, what do I know, but I'll just open my mouth and things will come out, and the thing that's going to come out is, let's say that leadership might be at times just honoring and recognizing the gifts that each and every one of us have, and encouraging leadership as one who encourages others to follow their hearts. I think encouragement probably means to follow your heart, something like that.
Feed the heart.
Ron, they're working with bringing, we'll say, youth who are having troubles with the with society and the system that goes the schools to prison pipeline, but bringing incarcerated youth up into Yosemite to receive the healing power of those sacred waters. But what happens, I think Ron would say, is that what happens is these our youth begin to feel their own beauty and respect themselves, like they are earth also, and they are worthy of being here in a good way. So I keep returning to what can I do to be in better balance myself. How can I be a leader to my own self? Anyway, that's what came out of my mouth.
Oh, that's great. And it's also it's also that, you know, there's Saturn, Pluto, Jupiter, opposite things, you know. Okay. And it does remind us to tap into the magic potency of place is really rising up to nourish and guide us through this story storm, you know, as Ron knows well, as you know well, as really everyone listening, remembering what we've forgotten, remembering what we've forgotten. And from another guest on show, author of The Hummingbird's Daughter, Mexican woman Teresita, and this crucial moment I keep with me always, where her Aztec granny says, "Teresita, feel your feet on the floor, and even if you're in a hospital bed, feel your feet connecting to the earth and roots coming out of them down, 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 down." And Teresita says, "Grandmother, does this mean I can't get hurt?" "No, child," she says, "we all get hurt. It means you won't be overpowered." Right. So aligning with what we love, aligning with what we love, is great. And then, just since you brought it up again, where who brought what? Who brought what? So wonderful Carmen Snyder, wonderful ally hag there, Carmen out there in Sonoma, sent me book. Going, oh, a book. It's from Carmen. It must be great. And hard to find. Okla Hanali, a novel about the Okla people. And it's like, of course, Oklahoma is the Okla people. I didn't know. I'm a silly white person. Oh, my God. Right. And it was Oklafalaya, which meant the magic land, Oklafalaya. And all of those names, Tulsa and Biloxi, you know, and I mean, those are all native names, you know, but it's a great novel. And the character, Okla Hanali, is great. But just a little moment, you know, what is it to be leadership? And of course, we're honoring our trickster self. And how do we seal our energy leaks where we just spend it in contempt and resentment and harumphitude and whatever? And so there's a leader. Right. So Anali is saying, Pushmantaha, say that I leave my grin there, grinning at him, and I walk out from behind it and take a ramble and a drink and a nap. And all the while he was holding his breath and swelling up and turning purple. And then I came back all rested and slip into my grin again. And so I tricked him into happiness. I did not think I knew how to do this with him, but since then I've done it with other men. You want, call me Mingo. And Mingo, but gathers molecules around it as a powerful word through the novel. It's really a self-possessed, powerful, embodied, authentic leader, trickster being, Mingo. So we go, oh, that's really great. But it's a great image, right? And we just put these things in our magic backpack. If somebody's ranting at you, just put your liberating, trickster, indefatigable grin there, and then go, you know, have a smoke, have a coffee, have a nap, gonna come back. So I think that's part of our repertoire there.
A repertoire that I find I have to practice, right? If everything is a dream, you know, whatever shows up right now, you know, is a part of that dance. You know, what can I practice with this? And so that we might, when things maybe really do get dire, we are able to be more cool and keep that grin and go on a walk about. But this is all very interesting, but I understand that, and I understand that you have curly hair. Can you tell us about that? It must be beautiful.
Well, Yes, it's the Underworld Spa Service, right? Which is yes, my hair has been all my life, you know, pretty straight there. I always yearned for curly hair, but as some of you know, I went through exhilarating Underworld medical adventure last year. Knock on wood and throw salt over my left shoulder, you know, everything pretty good, but the hair came back curly in fetching ringlets, and naysayers will say, oh, those are chemo curls, they go away. I'm like, no, you stay your little curls, I don't care. Anyway, so it's you know, there is beauty everywhere. It's really worth the whole adventure, actually. So yes, whimsy gleaned from the underworld and are playing and cooperating, because, you know, this is dedicated to the resilient trickster, citizen trickster arising within us all, and just putting out some standards. You know, this beautiful language of astrology, you know, much dissed and little understood and all that stuff, but it is the original language of, you know, in which much symbolic wisdom was embedded. So Aquarius is our inner community and our outer community, and our outer community not just human, of course, and it is called ruled by Saturn, limits and Uranus, wildness, ingenuity, freedom. And I like throwing out ruled, meaning really it's an incarnational agent of Saturn, constraint and authority, and Uranus, wildness, right? It's a dance. And so there's so much craziness going on out there, and just putting some standards in there that possibly can leave our grin there and go, you know, hang out and come back when somebody else is having a tantrum yoga about wearing masks, like, oh, you know. And I just go, it's from my dogs. When I picked them up as puppies, they'd never had a leash on, and when I put it on, all the light went out of their eyes. They were like, oh, no. And I go, no, here's a story. People and dogs need stories more than they need bread. They're like, blah, blah, blah. And I go, it's a restraint that's going to lead to greater freedom. We're going to go out into a big world. And they're like, oh, we're cool with that. And it's citizenship, because even, you know, there was crazy stuff coming, you know, a little bit out of New Zealand that was doing so well with this fabulous woman leader, and there's fabulous women, the Prime Minister of Finland, fabulous, and all the cabinet members are women in Finland, go, anyway. But somebody sent me a thing thinking I'd agree with it, and it was some really rude person, you know, going into a store going, you're telling me I have to wear a mask, you know, and I have to give you a whatever, and this is an abridgment of my freedom. And the person there was, they should have left their grin there and gone out and come back. Right? And the person who sent it to me, a nice person, was like, yeah, you know, they're going to take our, and it's like, no, actually, nuance, you know, New Zealand doing great. It's a cultural agreement of constraint leading to greater freedom. And now they have zero virus, right? Beautiful.
And make better masks than, you know, oh, gee, I want to wear that mask.
I have some of those.
What's the mask you've been wearing, right?
I have a really great, from Etsy, some humble dad and his kids making these great masks. I have this great mask that everyone smiles at, and it's just the right amount. It's a quite fierce but smiling tiger. And people go, oh, it's liberating. It's very liberating. People go, oh, that's the best. I like that thing. Right, so more masks going, good sir, perhaps you'd like a more fun mask, or there you go, there you go. And like the doggies, it's a leash. Yeah, it's a leash, but it's going to lead to greater freedom for everybody, you know, for all beings, including yourself. It's really a good idea. Boundaries and freedom go together. There we go. And it's, you know, we're all learning what is it to be a good citizen. That's really gone our thing here, you know. And I do go back to, you know, even conservative Edmund Burke, as a conservative taught me. He said, you know, big government, schmig government doesn't, the more we cultivate inner, he would have said Saturn if he'd known, Saturn, you know, qualities of dedication and responsibility, the fewer outer rules we need. We go, there you have it, you know. We are an infantile culture. We need little training wheels for just minimal, say, in reverent sense. But we see people. The only channel I really love is Esther Hicks channeling Abraham, just because her language is so liberating. And she says that the best thing we can do, really, for anybody is to see them. Seeing is very big right now. See them connected to their own wise autonomy. I engage this, I practice this, and even in hot circumstances, if one has time to do such a thing, it really does work. as opposed to just being hermaphroditeness. It's like, oh, I see them connected to their own sense of autonomy. But it is, what are we doing here, having the luxury to cavort and swim about for those who are under extremely adverse circumstance, you know, the police baton's coming down. We want to fill the group mind with solace and tricks and escape and safety and ingenuity and grins that's available to everybody in more reactive circumstance. How about?
Yeah, we wish to honor all sacrifice that's taking place as we speak, and I don't think the level of suffering on the planet. Well, we might say the two-leggeds are in a tizzy right now, but the rest of the world has been getting a little bit of a reprieve, and we want to, you know, with each breath, we want to unify with all of the critters, all of the wild ones, everything which creeps or crawls, swims or flies, because that's who we are. We're not really human without the rest of the creation. And in whatever small, humble, great ways any of us, as we go through our days, can link up more with the rest of the creation, that helps give us more ingenuity and better ways to cope with this dire time of beauty.
Yes. Right, and again, just playing, you know, let every precedes let every adversity, small and huge, right, inspire us to experiment, you know, and to call in what is needed for ourselves and others, right? So all of these waftings, and so since the sun does trine Neptune, and you are such a friend of, well, all life, of course, but the ocean, and you're just in off the ocean and the orcas, and you guided us down the Copper River in rafts with Dune Lankert. Hi, Dune. And that was good too. At first, I had never done such a thing, so I was worried, like, oh, the things, and how are we going to, and then once you get in, right, it's like, oh, this is great, gliding, and these guys know, you guys know what you're doing. What?
Yeah, going with the flow as the river, we become more river-like, and on you know, on the Copper River there in Alaska, where you and I think Rhiannon and Deborah Felmuth were on that trip also.
Yes, yes, yes.
The, you know, every morning and every evening, cooking around the fire, you know, and we gather in circle and we're storytelling. The fire is that hearth, you know, of stories, and just living together, right? You spontaneously become a tribe, and you're problem solving together, and you're eating together, and sleeping together, and camping together, and then the river always there, you know, singing down the valley. There's some, it's a great and healing thing, but it's of course such a metaphor for this river of life. How important it is to be gathering together around the fire and in conversation in our daily lives, and I see that with the orcas. Their orcas are around the world, pan-oceanic, and they have all sorts of different cultures. But in the Pacific Northwest, there are some orcas that appear to only eat fish. There are others that hunt other marine mammals, and then some others are shark predators and things. But I know best the ones that eat salmon, just like I've eaten a lot of salmon. I used to be a salmon fisherman. But every year I get out with these orcas, and they're coming into Prince William Sound when the salmon are coming in, and you'll see, Oxlew, all the orcas, of course, have names, and I think they like them okay, and they probably have other secret names that we don't know, but they like the ones we call them also. But you see Oxlew, oh, she has another baby, and the young orcas, the newborn orcas, instead of being black and ivory white, they're black, and the white is sort of orange yellow, and they're quite small compared to their mother. We call them little pickles, but the little baby orcas are 7 feet long and weigh 500 pounds or something. But they can't dive as long and stay down as long as mother. So when fish are around and the orca family disperses to each go on their fishing frolics, mother and the calf will be near each other, and mother will catch a salmon and then come to the surface and share it with the calf. And we were watching one time, and for about an hour and a half, and there must have been five or six salmon that were caught, shared with the new calf. And then suddenly this calf, I'm assuming is feeling good, you know, and it's going, I feel good. And it just starts leaping out of the water, you know, breaching, as we say, six times in a row, and then would rest a minute and six more times. And there is that. It's learning about the world for the first time, you know, mother, food, oh, I can leap, I can dance. And now is a good time to remember, you know, in our childlike enthusiasm, what it is that we love about this world, so that we can be in love with being here in this hard time, because we need to want to be here.
And yeah, and feel the embrace and nurturing of the mother feeding salmon and the grandmother orca, right? I mean, isn't it a medium recent study that came out about the importance of the grandmother orcas? I think it's the orcas.
Well, in this orca culture, it's matriarchal. So everyone lives their whole lives with the grandmothers and the mothers, and that's the sort of social structure. Now there will be. Throughout the year, there will be what we might call super pod gatherings, where a bunch of orca families and matrilines come together, and there's a county fair, and there's a nursery over here, and oh, there might be sex behind the carnival tent over there. But you'll see these enormous lineups, like a whole matriline from the matriarch and her family. There might be 40 of them, and they will all line up side by side, and then across like a football field, there will be another group, 30 of them all lined up. And there's this magnificent kind of ritual thing, and then they all start cavorting and playing with one another. And I think we witnessed that 5 years in a row on August 1st, on that same day, 5 years in a row, was this, you know, county fair gathering. But what it keeps revealing is that throughout the day, you come together with family, with tribe, with the rest of the creation, and your self-identity is not just as a single being, but as part of this larger being.
And to all those feeling isolated, a lot of it is telepathic, because I did have the study that came out, and I hope it's true, and there are facts don't belie this, but it was scientists, men scientists, saying, what possible use could postmenopausal mammals be? Possible use. And they go, oh, the orcas, the grandmothers. The grandmothers often out front, you know, but sometimes out front by a long way, not visible, but like, And they said the study showed that the longevity and well-being of their grandchildren was, you know, just a bazillion times more if their grandmother was doing the thing. And we go, there, take that, you know.
Yes, and orcas can live to be, the females are more long-lived than the males in general, but the females can live 70 years. There is this huge, and the culture that gets passed on could be millennia old, right? So it is these long-lived grandmothers that have the experience and have maybe seen wave cycles that younger ones haven't, or know what to do in this case, or they know if we swim for 24 hours on this bearing with the Earth's magnetic field, we will, there will be food and there will be a rest, or we're likely to find others of our kin, right? There's this living culture. These living cultures that are all around us, you know, the trees have culture, everything has a culture, including we humans.
Huh. May it be so. May it resonate and come back alive, you know, modeled after the orcas and the rocks and the, yeah, whatever. Because that is, you know, what do we most want to cultivate? That is this dark of the moon to the new moon Cancer. What qualities of woof woof would we, you know, would be salutary and heartening for us to cultivate? Well, yeah, a lot. The embrace of the ancestral grandmothers, was a, the wonderful, you know, chant to Yamaya, you know, kai kai kai. How wonderful my mother is in the ocean. My mother is an anchor in the storm. Right, to feel. And I think, you know, to the as we begin to deconvene in our blessing, you know, for ourselves and for all beings who could use Wuzza Wuzza and support and the support of everything that we've ever been, that, you know, the Sylvia taught me about the great Celtic bard Amargin, you know, "I have been the glint of light on a wave, I've been a boar in its boldness, I've been the guest of 100 kings, I've been an orca, I've been everything." And it's like, whoa, and may all of those qualities of intelligence and adventure, you know, report in to support us all, and the earth rising up, there we go, and going, "You silly humans, you can't do this on your own." We had to make things. Oh, well, maybe we have time, like about a minute, to return. When you said, "Sometimes the healing dose is close to the lethal dose," jauntily last night, and I knew that we should do this, could you say more in a minute? Or
yeah,
not.
Well, it's not, you know, here we are singing merrily, and then in life something pushes our head underwater for we know not how long, and are we going to live or die? But sometimes when we get rung like a bell, when tragedy happens or there's an intervention, it's a chance to reset our priorities, and sometimes it has to be near unto death. Or we might say, you know, the healing dose could be greater than the lethal dose, and there will be plenty to do in the next life. But that's what I would say about that. It can be hard. Sometimes the healing is hard, and yet it is genuine.
Right. Well, splendid, oh, great spirit, brother, ally in perpetuity, and many wonderful things that we sally forth out into the memosphere. And thank you, David Lynn Grimes. We will be in perpetual trickster reciprocal blessing cahoot in perpetuity. May it be so. Hi. There we go.
Blessings to you, and ha-ha-ha-da-da-da-dee-da-da-dee-da-da-dee-da to everyone.
That's excellent, and thanks always to Kirsten Thomas, great board up, and CoyoteNetworkNews.com. You can sign up for our not impositional newsletter there. You know, and remember, better a trickster than a martyr be. Here we go, CoyoteNetworkNews.com, and we will reconvene next week. Thank you, team. Thank you, David. Thank you, Kirsten. Thank you, Joe.